Whatever the adventure, there's a BMW engineered to take it on. The X3 delivers a striking design with agile performance. The 100% electric i4 packed with pure electric energy. Or the plug-in hybrid X5, an impressive, versatile SUV granting full control on every journey. Choose what powers your next adventure during the BMW Road Home Sales Event. BMW, the ultimate driving machine.
Hurry in for exceptional offers through December 2nd. Visit BMWUSA.com for details.
Well, there's all the things that we love about each other, and there's all the things that we know about each other that we have to overcome in a game like this. He's a great coach, he's a great man, great leader, and he's got a great football team. So that makes it complicated.
Thank you very much, John. Thanks. Now with Jim Harbaugh, here is Laura Rutledge.
Coach, you told us no one has a better brother than you. What are you feeling as you prepare to coach against your best friend?
I love my brother. I'd lay down my life for my brother, but I would not let him win a football game. And he wouldn't want it that way. Yeah, it just feels cool. Feels cool. We're ready to have at it.
Edge Ravens. John Harbaugh, they get the win. 30-23. They were down 10-0 in the game. Herbert and the Chargers got out to a fast start, but did not get the victory. And that's that. Baltimore looking 99% to make the playoffs.
Mm-hmm.
There was a hot minute there where, hey, could they? Their schedule's tough. Could they drift?
Yeah, I never took that too seriously.
Yeah, they're 8-4 now. The Ravens are 8-4, and their next game is the Eagles. Like, if they lost last night, now that's 7-3. Lose to the Eagles, that's,
yeah,
you know, or whatever.
And the Steelers, who are 8-3, so actually half game up on the Ravens, they played the Bengals this week in Cincinnati.
Big one for Cincinnati. If the Bengals lose this game, the Bengals' playoff odds go to?
Oh, they got to be like 2%, right?
2%.
2%? Yeah. I was going to say, they got to win. They have to win all of them, don't they? They can lose. They can drop one, but it might depend on what the one is.
Well, they play the Steelers twice. They have to beat them probably twice.
Okay.
And in between, it's Cowboys, Titans, Browns, Broncos. So
does it matter? Like, if the NFC game is the loss there, then maybe that's a little more likely for them. I don't know. They don't have much. They don't have much margin for error.
No, obviously. No. Their playoff chances right now are like 10% as it is, Cincinnati. So anyway, good morning, Jeremy and Joe. Josh Schmidt producing here as well. The three of us yesterday, so we'll take some calls on this if you want to ask us a question. I want to just tell you what we did yesterday because we had a chance to tour the new Bills Stadium that's currently being constructed, the new Highmark Stadium. You know, the one with the cranes. That one.
Yeah.
Imagine if we just toured the current stadium. Yeah. I've been through here a bunch.
Uh-huh.
But a chance to look at the new stadium, you know, taking the construction, the lift, that's what was different. So last time we went through this, you weren't there for the last one.
Mm-hmm.
Last time we went through, there was not an upper concourse yet, I don't think. And it definitely didn't have canopy over it. Now there's canopy. Mm-hmm. Like, you can see the stadium at its top.
Yeah.
So we went up in a construction lift, all the way to the press box area,
yep,
where you'll start to see all this stuff come together. And it's still mostly what you're looking at is concrete and steel and,
yep, insulation, you know,
yeah,
on the inside. Yep.
Yeah, lots of bones and all that. But we got all the way to the top of the press box, walked around the upper concourse, the lower concourse, onto the field, through the locker room areas.
Yep.
And the scope of this thing, like, it's just, it's wild. It's like a city itself.
Oh, the scale of the project itself, I feel like you can't really comprehend unless you're like walking around and just, oh, there's three workers doing this over here, and I walk 5 more feet, and then they're doing something else down here. I mean, it did a city. That's the right way to put it. There's a city just constantly working on it in every corner of the stadium, doing something different.
Even walking around, it's like hard to comprehend the massive amount of work that's being done in one small area at all times.
I think the biggest takeaway I had from being there in person is really getting the feel of what it means that every seat is like on top of the field. You know what I mean? Like how close it is to the stadium as opposed to the current stadium, where if you're in the upper deck, you do kind of feel far away. Like you're pushed back a little bit versus this one where I never felt like I was far from the field, even in the upper deck.
Yeah.
Like, it's still, like, it kind of feels like it's right there, isn't it? And maybe that'll feel different when there are 50,000 people below you, but That was a crazy.
Yeah, even those last seats, like in the upper deck. There, again, there aren't seats there. It's just like rows of precast concrete where we can walk. And there's one point we're standing in the upper concourse on the upper deck, the 400 level, I think is what it's going to be called. And I'm looking behind me thinking, there's not that many rows behind me. This is pretty much as far away as you'll get.
Yeah.
And it does not feel like it's very far away at all. So,
no.
Intimacy is going to be one word here that you'll use for a stadium like this. But when the canopy gets up, all it's also not fully enclosed yet, which it will be.
Yeah, it's only on the one side.
Right.
Yeah.
And then the canopy will up over top of that. So, I feel like the feeling of being in there now, how it is, it's going to be even amplified once they finish closing it off and putting the canopy over it. And there's also, like, the exterior, the outside, whatever, the full facade, that's going up maybe in the winter.
Mm-hmm.
I think you said February might start for that.
Yeah.
And you already get a sense of, as the wind blows and you're on the field, like, you're not feeling wind. Like, it does not.
Yeah, no.
There's not much at all. And that's still, again, just bones of a stadium.
Yeah. Also, getting a look at, there's going to be a patio bar behind the one scoreboard, and it will be outside, and you are overlooking the city, the lake. You see Niagara Falls in the distance. We talked about it and tried to figure it out, but it was a cloudy day. Then maybe on a clear day you could see Toronto, like in the way distance.
Yeah.
But you can at least see Niagara Falls, the city, and then the lake. Like, while drinking, like, having a beer during, like, halftime or before the game or whatever. I thought that was going to be pretty cool.
The standing room only, the amount of places you'll be able to stand if you just want to stand. Because it is interesting. I was thinking about this looking at the stadium. Like, if you, all right, everybody, you've been to a Bills game, right? Picture you are seated on the 50-yard line on one side of the stadium. You're looking across the stands to the other side. You see tons of seats, and there are really no gaps, right? There's the lower section, there's the suites, there's the club, and then there's the club suites, and then there's the upper section. But there's not really any gaps. It's just a wall of seats. And what you'll see in the new one is I feel like you'll see a lot more of people milling about, because the best way I could describe this is the only way to get views 360 degrees all the way around walking the concourse is to not have seats in the way.
Right.
So that's where people will be standing. That's where, if you're walking to go get something and you stop and pop your head over to watch a play and then head off to the bathroom or whatever, that is a very different architectural thing that in the stadiums in, 50 years ago, they never even thought about doing.
No.
And now that is normal, right? Like, that's pretty standard to be able to walk and see the game from the concourse. The concourses are much, much bigger.
Yeah.
Of course, that's going to be something that I think about a lot.
How much wider they are. Yeah.
Yeah. Room to get around. I mean, wouldn't you say the of all the things at the new stadium that are the most difficult to deal with, is not walking the concourse the toughest thing?
Oh, yeah, especially it's a nightmare. You try to go out there at halftime because it's so packed. Like, you can't. You how often do you have to cut through a bathroom line? You have to cut through, like, just to walk through. Cut through a drink line. Just everything is all together at the same time. So this is, I don't know the numbers on it, but it felt like it was twice as wide at least just from walking through it.
Finding the little pockets of, like, standing room only too was just kind of interesting. Like, you're walking around and there's, like, big areas you can tell, like, you can just watch the game from there, but then you turn a corner and, oh, there's this little section that you can just, like, hang out in.
Did you know about the patio bar, by the way, at the field level, at 50-yard line?
Yeah.
We walked down to that too. I had forgotten that was going to exist. That there'll be, like, a bar area or, like, a club level area, like, on the field level, basically. I think it's propped up a little, so you can, like, see over the players.
Yep.
But, like, down at the 50-yard line. Super cool. Super cool.
It's just going to be so different. And the big picture view of it is, it's a soccer stadium. And I say that in the best way.
Yeah.
I don't say that in any way about that means it's miscast. I mean, I've been to a couple of, well, one soccer stadium over in England. I've been to Arsenal in London. And people that have been to see the Bills at Tottenham are going to notice the similarities. Like, it's just, whether it's because it's fully enclosed or it's the canopy that has that curve to it, it looks like a soccer stadium.
Yeah.
And I think that's fantastic. So, whatever. It was a cool trip. Nice to be in there.
Yeah.
Thinking about the elements, thinking about the snow. That's another thing. When we were there, it was drizzling a little bit. And yeah. 65, I think the number's like 65% of the seats will be covered by the canopy. We got down into the lower bowl where you are not covered by the canopy, and there's a little bit of a drizzle falling. The field will not be covered by the canopy. So upper deck, you are tucked in there, and you are just not in the elements at all.
Oh, no, you're basically in a – if you are – hey, if you're team dome, I mean, there is one element – there's one area, too, up there where you're covered by one level above you and then also the canopy. Like, at that point,
you're tucked
in. For that row, you're, like, almost in a dome.
You might as well be at the carrier dome. Yes.
You might as well be, right, exactly, because you're not dealing with the wind because of the exterior. You're not dealing with what's above you because you actually have two layers above you. And then, again, 65% have at least one layer above you. So, I mean, yeah, it would basically be this if you're indoors.
Yep.
Or if you want to be outdoors, you want to be in the elements, you're just closer to the field.
One thing...
That's always been interesting to me, by the way, that closer to the field is in the elements.
Well, that's where the hardcore,
you would see,
the hardcore fans
right, exactly. Like some people are different than others because a lot of people would consider it a benefit to be under it, and that's actually going to be further away, which you would typically think is less expensive, but how it goes.
But the fact that concourses will be closed, protected from the elements, even if you are, all right, let's go back out and sit outside, you'll be able to get a break.
I did feel like when we were in the concourse that I was like inside.
Yeah,
which it's almost like a wind tunnel sometimes at the current stadium when you're in those concourses. Sometimes, not always.
803-0550. So, chance to get that. Our thanks to the Bills for bringing us out and taking us through. And of course, like one other thing, shout out to all the people that are there all the time, working.
Yeah,
700 people on site at a time, up to 1,000 some days, 900 the next day. And just the massive undertaking that the whole thing is. It's crazy. Yeah. It's crazy. So, get excited. I don't know. I still don't. Then there's the flip side of it of people ask me, like, hey, how about your ticket? Have you been called in yet? And I have not. Mm-hmm. I think my ticket rep, last I heard, I might get my call for where my ticket is in March.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know.
Yep.
So, but we've been through the Bills experience. We've seen all that. But for the actual where my ticket is and what that might mean, I still do not know.
I know they're doing lower bowl, though, because I have a buddy who just got called in recently, got his ticket. So I think they're past club level, though, I think. And maybe they're still doing club level along the way, but I know they're into at least some people in the lower bowl.
And there's the one, like, I guess field level is what it's going to – it's another 100-level club where you walk down into a giant place that's just for you.
Oh, it's it's like a club. Like it's almost like an underground club, it feels
It will be. Like, I don't know if I'll ever see it, but it'll be a massive place for people to gather. And, looks like it'll be pretty sharp. So, there you go. 803-0550, your phone number, 1-888-550-2550. Tracking a winter storm warning.
Is it a warning or a watch?
You're right. Sorry, it's a watch.
It's a watch, which I believe...
Yeah, Pat Hammer tweeting moments ago, it's a winter storm watch Friday into the weekend. Areas south of Buffalo, the city can get into some snow on Saturday. Many areas in the watch could see a foot or more through Monday. Now, as I understand it with the Bills and dealing with snow, okay, a foot of snow is going to fall. If you're running the Bills operations and there's a foot of snow going to fall before your game on Sunday Night Football, if that snow falls on Friday morning, you're fine.
Yeah.
Maybe even Saturday morning, it might be fine. If it comes right before people start coming to the game, that might be a problem. It's not all foot of snow might fall is created equally. There are different challenges, and we'll see. We had a caller earlier worried about the Bills not playing well or losing because of the elements, and it's a good thing it's an NFC team. Yeah.
I mean, the Niners also, aren't the Niners going to come in and try to run the football? Isn't that going to be their game plan anyway? Are they usually the team, especially if the quarterback can throw the ball deep? Aren't they going to be doing all screens and McCaffrey, and they'll try to get Debo involved, although I guess they could have tried that last week and they didn't. So, yeah, like I'm not saying the Bills are not built for this type of weather if it happens more than they have been in the past. Like I do think they kind of are, but just... I don't know how likely this game or many games are to actually severely affect what you do. Oh, I can't really throw the ball with Josh Allen down the field in this game. Might as well sit Amari Cooper for this game because of what the elements are. Like, I'm just not thinking that that's on the way Sunday or that it's likely to happen by the end of the year. It could happen, but the Niners, yeah, like they're an NFC team, but they're not the would anyone consider them a finesse team? The Niners?
Like, no.
That's not how I think of them.
No, I don't think so.
So I think they're built to play a game like that if that's what ends up happening.
Shanahan's an interesting discussion because if they have a bad year and they miss the playoffs, like you pointed out, he's had a couple bad years mixed in when their quarterback gets hurt.
Yeah.
He's also made the Super Bowl twice.
I know. Right.
With quarterbacks that no one would say are elite. Garoppolo and Purdy. I mean, Purdy's probably the better of the two. But for a guy that's made the Super Bowl twice,
it's pretty wild. He's done both. He's made the Super Bowl twice, and he has 2 6-win seasons, a 4-win season, and this year he's on his way to what? Maybe 7, 8?
Yeah.
Well, we'll see. Maybe are we taking them too lightly? If Purdy's playing, are they a NFC wild card team? Are they still dangerous? Because like a lot of their other guys are back. McCaffrey is back. Kittle is back on the field. I think Bosa's back on the field. If Purdy's back on the field, then really, the two things we've talked about, they're missing Ayuk and they won't get him back, and Deebo Samuel's not the same. And maybe that's the point, right? Is receiver is so important in this league, and if their number one and number two are one, out, and two, not the same that they once were, then that's going to make a serious impact on their offense. It makes them more reliant on Kittle, honestly.
Yeah.
And he's having a huge season, mostly because he has to.
Right, because with Ayuk gone and Deebo, I mean, I don't know about like quite washed for Deebo, but just not the same.
Right.
Is McCaffrey, here's the thing about McCaffrey that's interesting. Like, there's a bunch of good data on Jordan Mason being legitimately good.
Yeah, yeah. And McCaffrey was kind of, I know number-wise, he was not good on Sunday against Green Bay.
Like, Mason yards after contact, he's been a good back for them.
Yeah.
And, of course, they have to go back to McCaffrey, and they just even re-signed him recently.
Well, and Shanahan is very much like he uses a workhorse, right? He's always done that. Whoever, even when Mason was in there, he didn't really rotate until Mason got injured at the end. McCaffrey in 3 games so far has 43 carries for 149 yards. It's 3.5 yards per carry.
Yeah.
That's tough. That's really tough. So, yeah, but like again, like Shanahan's tendency is I've got a starting running back. He's the guy that gets all the snaps. He gets all the touches. He gets all the receptions. Like that's typically how he goes about it. He's weird for me to analyze and to think about because I do think he's an incredible schematic coach and is a great offensive mind, but there was a criticism of him earlier in the year that I think he got mad about, maybe because someone brought it up to him in a press conference, that he doesn't let Purdy and has never let his quarterbacks do pre-snap checks, not in charge of the offensive line protections, not allowed to audible. Like Shanahan, if there's any criticism I'll ever have of him is I always wonder if he would want the superstar quarterback versus a guy just like a Purdy or a Garoppolo who is going to do their job and not go out of structure too often unless they have to, because Shanahan, it's his offense, and he doesn't want you to change the play. He wants his play called, or he'll give you two. That was the thing, is that Shanahan will give you two play calls, but he's not letting you change it from that. If you don't like the two play calls, tough. You got to pick one of them. Hmm. So I don't know how much that impacts him, though, because, again, he's made 2 Super Bowls, and he's made it work with quarterbacks that aren't that, you know, freakish talent level. Although Purdy is more talented, I think, than I gave him credit for originally.
He's all right. He's pretty good. He did some light throwing yesterday.
Yeah.
That's the report, that he did light throwing yesterday with no issue. Of course, Nick Bosa, Trent Williams, you might even say those are bigger potential losses for the Niners. Neither played last week.
Yeah.
For Trent Williams, it's an ankle issue. For Nick Bosa, it's a hip and an oblique.
Mm-hmm.
So the Niners are missing, you know, so many A-level players. If you miss, how many teams could sustain through starting quarterback?
Mm.
He's a maybe, but
number one receiver,
best receiver, number one offensive lineman, and number one pass rusher.
Yeah, they're almost nobody probably would be able to overcome that.
Yeah. 803-0550. Cody in Rochester is up. Hey, Cody. Good morning.
Good morning, guys. Hey, quick question for you. Since you're talking about the stadium, one of my favorite things about the current stadium is those flyovers are amazing. and those planes can get super low. With the construction of the new stadium and how it's kind of a partial dome, do you think those will even be a thing anymore? Or will we see them?
That's a good question.
You'll see them.
Yeah.
You'll definitely see them.
Yeah, there's definitely...
You won't see them coming as much.
There's much less sky to look at.
That's, yeah.
Without a doubt, there will be much less sky to look at.
So when they did the... What was the big one, again, a couple weeks ago?
Like the C5?
The C5. I could, from my vantage point where I was sitting for that game, I could see that plane coming like 10 miles away. And I'm assuming, thinking about what we saw yesterday, the overhang and how much of the sky you see, that you probably won't see it coming the same way. You might not see it until it's actually right over the stadium. You'll hear it before you see it.
Yeah.
So that would be different, I guess, but you'll still get flyovers.
It is a good question, though. Thanks, Cody. Yeah, that's one thing we can't quite visualize yet. I'm sure the Bills in their models can, but standing at midfield looking up, how much sky do you see? Like right now, in the current stadium, you see endless sky. And now, in the new one, that'll be significantly less.
What is the thing you think people are going to enjoy the most? Is it going to be the overhang? Is it going to be the way the stadium is so steep, so everybody is right there?
The thing people are going to enjoy the most is not feeling like they are outside when they are in the bathroom.
Right.
That's how I feel about it.
Uh-huh.
Or the concourses are just slush piles of bleh.
Oh, those places are... they can get vile in the winter. Yeah. Wear muck boots,
yeah.
Basically.
Yeah, I mean...
You still probably would want to wear boots, I'm assuming, but maybe not.
803-0550. When we return, little news and notes around the NFL. Jer and Joe's Knowledge Emporium, where we tell you a little thing from each game this week that you need to know. You don't know you need to know, but you need to know a bunch that happened this week in the NFL. It's coming up next. Seth Appert on the State of the Sabres at 8. Howard picks the Bills 8:30 here on WGR.
Here is Hill. He gets the first down, and on he goes. Inside the 10. End zone. Touchdown, Justice Hill.
Ravens run through the Chargers on Monday Night Football. Bye-mageddon comes to a close. Now we're into week 13 in the NFL. Thanksgiving week, there are no byes.
And then Denver next week and probably somebody else.
Yeah, there are a bunch of byes on the backside.
Okay.
But Thanksgiving week, everybody plays.
Okay. Good, because it's double elimination week in guillotine, so.
Yeah, that's
better
right.
Better have everybody.
That's a rule we've got in our league. No byes.
Was that done on purpose? Pick a week with no byes?
Yes.
Good.
Yes,
smart.
It was done because we had people that wanted to join the Guillotine League, and you can have as many as you really want.
Yeah.
So, fine, we'll add another. We'll have a double elimination Thanksgiving.
All right.
Good luck, everyone. I would recommend everybody get a Guillotine League going. Jeremy and Joe, good morning. All right, we'll keep the music running. Jer and Joe's Knowledge Emporium of NFL games and such. Things you need to know from the week of games that you didn't need to know you need to know. It's a long tagline, but we're working on it.
Mm-hmm.
All right, I'll start.
Okay.
Broncos-Raiders.
I think that's the game I saw the least of this Sunday.
I saw a good chunk of it. Cortland Sutton was almost traded. He wasn't. Turns out he's still great.
Yeah.
And doing great things with Bo Nix. A stat on the Broncos and the Raiders here, the Broncos especially. PFF puts the Broncos pressure rate, like how often Bo Nix gets pressured.
Yeah.
They are best in the league at keeping him unpressured.
Okay.
That's a bounce back from last year where they were worst in the league.
Yeah.
The Broncos went from worst to first in allowing pressure.
Yeah.
How many offensive linemen moves did they make in the offseason? Zero.
Oh. It's a quarterback stat?
It's a quarterback stat.
Yeah. Ball's coming out?
The Russ effect. The ball. Sure. Maybe it's the play's designed to get it out quicker.
Yeah.
The coach is doing the job. But the Broncos did not overhaul their offensive line. Mm-hmm. They're worst to first in pressure rate allowed mm-hmm. is a function of their offense. And Russell Wilson, I mean, it's one of the reasons I think the Steelers are in trouble. The guy takes sacks and invites pressure. Even though they're having a good year, I just think against a good team, that's going to get them.
Okay. Chiefs and Panthers. I'm going to stick with the pressure theme, and then I got another one for this game. So Mahomes, we mentioned yesterday, Mahomes took 5 sacks in this game against the Panthers. He was only pressured 8 times. He has been taking more sacks on pressures than ever. But that is the highest sack percentage on pressures of any quarterback in a game this season. Mahomes. He took 5 on 8. The other stat from that game, Carolina, there are so many outcomes where they really actually should have won this game. They got to the red zone all the time. Carolina, only the third team since Andy Reid became the Chiefs coach to score on 75% of their drives against the Chiefs. They scored on 75% of their drives. Only the third team that's done that to an Andy Reid Chiefs team, and they lost. They kept getting to the 10, and then they couldn't get it in. And they had to kick field goals.
If Carolina's offense can move up and down the field on the Chiefs, then all the conversation about the Chiefs' defense from last year to this year, like, it's not the same defense.
I think what I noticed in that game, I watched way more than that game than I thought I would, is this was happening with Thielen a lot. They were going after a couple of the Chiefs' corners. The Bills went after, who's the Jalen Watson replacement guy? There's a replacement corner that the Bills targeted like 12 times last week, and the Panthers were going after him, and they were going after somebody else.
It's Nazi Johnson?
Nazi Johnson, yes. Like, their teams maybe are realizing that's a dude we could pick on.
Yeah.
And the Panthers were going to Thielen a few times in that situation.
It's funny, I searched his name because I'm pretty sure that's who it was.
Yeah.
And he has been targeted quite a bit. The headline of this is, Nazi Johnson's not the scapegoat for Chiefs' defensive problems some are making him out to be. Which probably means he is...
He's probably doing a pretty good job.
It's not going well. But the Chiefs have their defensive problems. Okay. Next up, Vikings-Bears. Matthew Collar had this stat on the Vikings, who, in point differential, Minnesota's near the top. It's like they got off to a really good start this year. They were one of the last unbeatens, right?
Yeah.
And then they've just been, you know, hanging out. They're near the top of the league in point differential. And Matthew points out that since 2022, when they have their starting quarterback in, a starter, I guess this would include Darnold, too. But start the season with a starter, and that guy plays. They are 26-10 in their last 36 games. That's a team that lost Cousins and went to Josh Dobbs. And, you know, they've had injuries all over the place. But 26-10 with their starting quarterback since 2022. The Vikings are good. I think it's a testament to Kevin O'Connell being pretty good.
Yeah. Let's go to Washington-Dallas. That was the circus game, end of the witching hour. Back and forth. There were 31 points scored in the final 3.5 minutes of that game. That is the second most in a game in the Super Bowl era. The only game that outbeat it was a game that I knew nothing about, had never seen in my life. Minnesota-Baltimore in 2013 scored 36 points in the final 3.5 minutes. I looked up the highlights of that game, and this goes to something we were just talking about earlier in the hour. That game was in the snow.
No.
It's a forgotten Minnesota-Baltimore game, 2013, in the snow, 36 points in the final 3.5 minutes. Washington-Dallas had 31.
That's crazy.
Yeah.
Next up, Lions-Colts. The Lions have their second consecutive 10-win season right now.
Mm-hmm.
That's the first time they've done that in franchise history. They've never won 10 games in back-to-back seasons.
That makes sense.
Which is not that shocking when you hear it, right?
Yeah.
Because the Lions have been a franchise with not a lot of success. But first time in franchise history to have back-to-back 10-win seasons.
Yeah, that's pretty... I saw something yesterday that they've never had this season, maybe 10-1 since 1930, like since the Great Depression. Basically, the Lions have not had this team. Next up, Arizona-Seattle. That game, you might have been wondering, how does Arizona only have 6 points? This goes back to pressure. Seattle might have the best pass rush in the league. Like, they've got some numbers that are super impressive. And in this game, Kyler Murray was pressured on 43% of his dropbacks. And Leonard Williams of the Seahawks, he had the highest pressure rate of any player in a game since 2018. He had 9 pressures on 32 pass rushes, 2.5 sacks. They could not block Leonard Williams. Murray was running for his life the whole game. Murray, when he was pressured, by the way, 4 of 13, 81 yards and a pick 6. That's how they beat. If you're wondering how the Cardinals only scored 6, that's how.
Yeah. That offense can't afford to get in third and long. Arizona's third and long offense is the worst in football. On third and 7 or more, the Cardinals, the success rate, Kyler's success rate is 10%. He is 12 of 30 for 58 yards. 3rd and 7 attempts or more. 12 of 30, 58 yards. The worst quarterback in football on 3rd and long. Okay, next up. I've got Bucks Giants. This is actually a good story that's not really much about that game. Baker Mayfield. He and his wife donated about $18,000 to a high school football team in Texas that last year went 1-8.
Yeah.
And they were in danger of losing the program because they didn't have money. So Baker bought the JV and the varsity. They bought them equipment. And they won the state title.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow, that's awesome.
They went from 1-8 to 10-3.
Yeah.
Baker said something to the effect of, like, all we did was get some helmets. They did the rest. But nice story. Like, he found out a high school football team was going to lose its program, paid for all their gear, and he was asked about it in the media this week about how the team would watch Baker games to, like, all get together. Like, that's our guy now, right? That's our sponsor.
Yeah.
And good for him and good for them.
Yeah, very cool. The Eagles have, since week 6, outgained their opponents by 1,300 yards. No other team in the league has outgained their opponents by 700. They are ragdolling teams recently.
Yes, they are. And I saw yesterday maybe Ben Baldwin pointing out that all the chatter about Saquon, the Eagles defense versus the Eagles offense, that the Eagles offense this year is about the same as it was last year.
Right.
It's the same.
Yeah.
It's their defense that has gone from bottom of the barrel to top 10.
And yeah, I saw that. 32nd to 7th, I think.
Yeah, that's why they're ragdolling teams, is because their offense is about the same, and their defense is a lot better.
That's part of the point. They've allowed, since week 6, they've allowed the fewest yards in the league by 200. They've allowed 1,558 yards. The next best is Kansas City at 1,782. And Kansas City, actually, this is even more impressive. All the teams in front of them, this is just in total yards, have played one fewer game than they have. So they have, per game, it would be even more impressive. The Eagles have allowed 1,500 yards in 7 games. All the teams right behind them, the Chiefs, 1,700 yards allowed in 6 games. The Packers, 1,800 yards allowed in 6 games. So yeah, their defense has been unbelievable, especially the last month. Could be part of who they're playing, too.
Patriots, Dolphins, Gerard Mayo.
Mm-hmm.
He has multiple times kind of stepped in it with what he says.
Yeah.
And this week, in postgame, he said, there's nothing I can do for them once they cross the white line. Talking about his players. He's given the, it's not my fault, I can't play for them routine as a head coach. Like, I feel like our execution's the problem. No, I need to coach better, none of that. Once those guys cross the white lines, there's nothing I can do for them.
Yeah. By the way, speaking of things coaches said, you see what Mike McDaniel said? Was it before the game or was it after? Might have been right after the game. Because he was asked about Calais Campbell's game, and he said that he threw an adult temper tantrum to keep the Dolphins from trading Campbell at the deadline.
Smart.
Yeah. And now they're still in it. So
they
looks pretty good on him. Houston, Tennessee. How did the Texans lose to Will Levis, who had thrown a pick 6 and taken 8 sacks in a football game? The answer might be that C.J. Stroud is playing like the worst football of any quarterback in the league. He, right now, since week 7, has a lower passer rating than Mason Rudolph, Daniel Jones, Gardner Minshew, Cooper Rush, Bryce Young, Drake May, Jameis Winston, and every other quarterback in the league except for one. Think you named the one quarterback that has a lower passer rating than C.J. Stroud?
Daniel Jones?
He's above him.
Wow.
Anthony Richardson.
Wow.
That's it. If you look at adjusted net yards per attempt, this is the yards per attempt that includes sacks and interceptions, he is at 4.6. That is 28th out of 30. Only Minshew and Jones would be below him on that. He's playing like one of the worst quarterbacks in football. But statistically, he's playing like one of the worst quarterbacks in football for over a month now.
Wow. Well, he had missed Nico Collins for a little bit of time there.
Yeah,
and I think he definitely misses Diggs. Like, if you want to do success rate, when they throw the ball to Diggs, it's 73% catch rate.
Yeah,
averaging 10 yards a catch. Like,
right,
and they miss that, the easy button throw. Boy, the Texans fell apart fast.
They are falling apart fast. But like, the thing is, there's nobody there to take advantage, right? Like the maybe the Colts. We knew the Colts were gonna probably lose to Detroit, right? And that happened. Now, here come the Colts. They play the Patriots, the Broncos, the Titans, the Giants, and the Jaguars to close. That is four bad teams they play.
Yeah.
I mean, what kind of odds can I get on? I mean, look, what kind of odds can I get right now in Houston to miss the playoffs? Just collapse. And then Indy to take the division because Indy doesn't play anybody.
It is something that division does, right? Hold on. Think about it. Last year, Jacksonville. 2-3 years ago,
yep.
Indy with Carson Wentz.
There was a year where Josh Dobbs played for the Titans to win the division in week 18, and both teams were like 8-8 or something. Yeah.
All right. That's the Jaron Joe Knowledge Emporium, what you needed to know from the games that you didn't know you needed to know. Seth Appert, Sabres assistant coach, joins us coming up top of the hour. We'll check in on the Sabres, who have a win streak. We'll see what's up with Tage Thompson. And, you know, after we talk to Seth, Joe and I could even talk about, you know, like scoreboard watching. You scoreboard watched last night.
Oh, it did not go well.
It did not go well. Tampa scored 8. So if you were watching Tampa on the scoreboard, they were active. 803-0550 to join us. 1-888-550-2550 on WGR. We'll chat with Seth Appert, Sabres assistant coach, coming up in a few minutes.
Is it funny to you at all the Jets are hiring the 33rd team to look for their general manager?
The
website?
Is that Mike Tannenbaum?
Mike Tannenbaum. Yeah.
Who's reporting that?
And like Sam Monson and Steve
Pelizzolo. Is the 33rd team reporting that?
No, it was like Diana Rossini, Jordan Schultz. It was a couple of them.
Feels like 33rd team should have broke that story.
Yeah, probably.
Most people out there probably don't know there is a 33rd team site.
That's the site. It's a website. Yeah, yeah. I didn't see them report it themselves.
Missed opportunity.
When they want it reported? Hey, guys, this is how good a site we are. The Jets are asking us to find their GM.
Yeah. Thanksgiving games on the way. Lions, Cowboys, and Packers to host. And if the Bills watch the Dolphins lose and then win, well, hang the banner. Division champs, 5th in a row. Jeremy and Joe on WGR. We're going to break in, and we'll check in on the Sabres. We scoreboard watched yesterday. They're still in a playoff spot. Play tomorrow against Minnesota. The gravy boat game. Gravy boat giveaway. Got to be the best giveaway in quite some time. Since the Tage Thompson growth chart, height chart. We got that one. I was a big fan of that one. Hangs in our basement. Kids get to stand next to him. He's giant.
Yeah. I like the little sticks they gave for a Poso 1,000th.
Those are good, too.
Oh, you know what I've been wearing the most? It's actually the Jeff Skinner 1,000th game beanie.
Oh.
It's a great winter hat. I've been wearing it, like, every day.
Seth Appert on the other side. Jeremy and Joe on WGR.